You need it. You got it. It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with your boy, Brian Campbell. And come on, folks. It's back with a bang. This is how we do it, like Montel in 94. The Brian Campbell, without question, the voice that you hear. Hey, guys, back with the needle. No, this is not USADA or VADA-driven. Back with the needle, though, and ready to insert with another lethal dose of that performance-enhancing audio. Fired up to talk some mixed martial arts this week, as we're kind of in a weird week in between the weeds here, in between UFC Fight Night cards on ESPN, but you know that news cycle is always friggin' churning. Lot to talk about, lot to fantasy book about, Brandon Wise. We'll get to that in a second, as it seemingly everybody wants to bang Connor these days.
Break out the red panties. We're rich, baby.
Everybody wants to get rich. We are going to get into that so much more. Anthony Pettis' comeback knockout of UFC Nashville. A look ahead to this Saturday's UFC Philadelphia card. Brotherly love. We'll get to all of that and more. But before we do, folks, a reminder. Hey, you like this show? You're entertained by it? Why don't you do something about that? Why don't you spread the love forward by heading on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you consume fine audio? Hey, we're on Spotify right now. I don't know if that surprises you.
I'm not surprised, mother.
But we are on Spotify. Head on over. 5 stars. Maybe drop a little line in there about what you like about the show. Whatever you got to do, folks. All right? Let's do it. Let's get fired up. Let's get into the show this week. Rev your engines. And face the damn pain. Oh, yeah. Let me bring in my co-host. He's number 65 in your playbook at North Boca High, but number one in your hearts, CBS Sports editor and writer Brandon Wise. He's back for more pain. BW, how is it?
I'm doing great. I'm not facing the pain like Stephen Thompson is right now, so that's also great.
I can't get into that yet. Oh, God.
I'm having a great weekend, BC. It was, you know, we thought it would be a more eventful weekend on the college basketball side. We got a good game last night out of Duke and Zion Williamson, but you know, the
fights were
also entertaining. How about
this guy, Taco Bell, this freak of nature throwing down, it ain't too hard for him to jam. I don't even think his feet got off the floor. I love freaks of nature like that.
He was great. He also did not block Zion cleanly once. But yeah, that's neither here nor there.
You need to, we must protect this house. On the ones and twos producing this week, you know him, you love him, Mikey Momile, my man. What's going on, Broham?
Nothing. I'm just seeing some rumors here that Taco Fall versus, recently retired Stefan Struve fight possibly happening, maybe?
Oh,
give it a couple years, something like that.
So here for that.
I think he could send, Struve to hell. I think he could.
I mean, he's got to get a little more agile before he gets into that kind of fight.
Did you guys catch the video of Tim Duncan training a little MMA over the weekend?
I did. Yeah. Those wheel kicks were looping.
Yeah, those would not feel good getting hit by one of those.
Interesting character turn for him, Brandon, because he was not a physical dude in the NBA. There's no skirmishes. There's no Bill Laimbeer highlights to run back.
He's such a weird dude in general. He just doesn't want to talk to anybody in the media. He just wants to keep to himself. And now that he's retired, he's just become like, I'm going to go do whatever the hell I want, guy. And now he's training MMA with the full gear on. I would love to see him give it a run, you know? Like, Royce White from the NBA is going to try and give this a run after he couldn't make it through the NBA circuit. Give me Tim Duncan. Come on.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Look, celebrity MMA, we haven't dug that deep into that yet. I mean, we did with, Kimbo versus Dada 3800 that time in the heart attack match, but, I think there's a market here. We had a good run with celebrity boxing about 15 years ago. Remember that? Remember those train wrecks we got to see on Big Fox? Why don't we roll out some celebrity MMA? Remember Wesley Snipes almost fought, Joe Rogan that time to try to pay off his, tax, evasion charges?
That's one I would have liked to see. That's one I would have liked.
Or, Jose Canseco's brother who stepped in and said that he was Jose Canseco.
Ozzy, oh yeah. Jose has been trying to get Ozzy a job since back when they were both in spring training with the A's, and Ozzy got cut because he sucks, and Jose said, I won't play unless you sign my brother, and then cooler heads prevailed at that point. Wow. Anyone see Jose Canseco's Twitter account lately, by the way? What a friggin' train wreck. Didn't he accuse, A-Rod of, a lot of gross things.
Out of some cheating. He's also going on hunts. So Brian, if you want, I think he's looking for Bigfoot. I think he left a phone number, so you just give him a call, schedule yourself a trip, you can go hunt for Bigfoot
with
him.
That's a joke in your world, but to me, I actually was considering it for some. I was thinking like, wow, is there a website? Yeah, where do I sign up for this? I mean, I'll expose the world with Jose Canseco. Look, he wasn't wrong about steroids, was he?
It's true.
Right? Right? Can we get him to figure out what TJ Dillashaw took, please? Please, can we get on this?
Did you know that he alleges his finger fell off during a poker game?
That's the end of this conversation.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Hey guys, let's start right there though. I don't even know if last episode if we got into this. I think the news flashed afterwards. But this whole TJ Dillashaw fallout of giving up his bantamweight title and us not knowing why, isn't this weird? Because USADA now with the rule change is not supposed to announce anything ahead of time till the investigation's done. But TJ jumped the gun and announced it. So it allowed USADA to put out a statement. New York suspended him for a year, which supposedly in the rule set triggers him having to give the title, yet nobody's coming public with what he's done. And in his statement, it made it sound like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I didn't really do anything wrong. I'll get back to you. But at the same time, here's my championship belt. What the hell's going on here?
So I think there has to be something more to the story. I think if you're a fighter, you don't give up that belt without knowing that you did something wrong. Otherwise, why would you not just say, nope? Let's wait the 2 months until we figure it out, until USADA has the facts and they bring them to you. So the fact that he just willingly vacated the title when he was pushing so hard for that Cejudo rematch.
Dead giveaway.
It tells me something that maybe he knew he was doing something wrong and this isn't a tainted substance.
Well, as Brandon will tell you, if you listen to Cody Garbrandt long enough, we should have already known this, correct?
That was like my favorite thing that happened with this on Friday, was everybody bringing back the Cody clip from, I think it was the first fight, not the second one, where he's saying, yeah, he taught everybody at Alpha Male how to do it. And it's like, did you just tell everybody that you're also on steroids, Cody? Like,
do you think the ink in his neck tat is performance enhancing?
Oh God.
Well, it's just weird because that USADA rule seemed to change everything in terms of, we're not going to shame a guy early and then find out later it was a tainted supplement. But then certainly the John Jones situation, I feel, completely changed USADA's current reputation in the MMA space, because I feel like they went to leaps and bounds to cut his suspension short and to give him every possible benefit of the doubt. It's a rare case where he's not a company guy. No. John Jones, not a company guy, but makes so much money, is so valuable to the UFC that they're just full on in the, hey, if you can't prove it, it didn't happen business. But TJ, we know, guys, we know, not a company man. Pro union, took him 2 years to get another title shot after he kind of controversially lost that decision to Cruz, had it come up the back way. There was going to be no, hey, let's hold the belt on TJ until the news clears, and then in the meantime, we'll float our 17th interim title out there. This seemed to be cut and dry. I feel UFC telling TJ, get rid of the belt and put a statement out, or we're going to out you. Any you guys, can you back me up on that? Can we get Jose Canseco to back up that conspiracy?
Well, that's the thing, is like, it honestly kind of felt like, you can't fire me, I quit. You know, like, I just don't understand how this all goes about, when there's obviously a lot going on behind the scenes that we're not hearing or seeing. But at the same time, it's like, TJ, you've always like claimed this clear error of like, I don't do anything. I think he was part of that USADA like 25 test t-shirt thing that they did. Remember when they were giving out to anybody who didn't fail a test in the last 25, they were giving them a free shirt.
Which, by the way, reminds me of that sign and the Simpsons inside the nuclear reactor, where Homer Simpson, where, you know, works. It's like 3 days since the last nuclear explosion. Yeah. Like, come on.
So yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It's just weird, you know, like I mean, we talked about it at the time. It was kind of weird to see TJ decide, hey, I'm going to cut to 125.
Very weird.
And then he's like, I've got all of this science. I've got all of this medicine. And I showed you that picture from that week for him on Twitter that one of his guys in his camp took while he was trying to cut to 125, like that day before, 2 days before. There's probably 30 pill bottles in front of him with different supplements that do different things to help him get down in weight. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say USADA does not approve of all of those supplements that are helping
well,
him get to 125.
USADA is like, you could take 5 of those ahead of a fight, but all 50. No, sorry. Can't do it. Like, come on. Like, it's okay. In one sense, for TJ Dillashaw, the man and the champion, this is a rough road he's been on the last 6 months to a year. No question about that. But it also kind of supports my original conspiracy theory of UFC tried to set him up to fail by sort of forcing him down to 125 to take face Cejudo. Now, we don't know if he forced him or if it was just dangling that second championship belt saying, here, TJ, you can go from current champion and pound-for-pound rated guy to an all-time great by becoming just the, I don't know, the fifth or sixth at that time. It seems like now it's happening every other week. Just the fifth or sixth champ in UFC history. I still feel this day, tell me it's a stupid conspiracy theory, that because TJ's not a company man, they realized Cejudo was the star to build on for the future. So they wanted to compromise TJ. And rather than just have Cejudo move up to bantamweight, they wanted to send TJ down. Whether you believe I'm spewing crap or not, it's a bad stretch for TJ Dillashaw. Wow, we actually have sound of Dana on the phone call when he called TJ to make him give up the title.
If you guys want to go back and be a fucking bartender, a short order cook, a fucking scientist, if that's what you really want to be, then go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's where TJ, I mean, maybe Patrick Cummins can get him a job at Starbucks, you know?
Yeah, it's... Like you said, it's a really bad stretch for him. It's a horrible look for UFC at this point when you're trying. I mean, I know you've been on this kick before about Tyron Woodley not being a company man. Neither is TJ. For all of that talk, he's not a company man either. He was part of that original GSP group to try and form a union. So maybe this was probably like a heaven sent for UFC. They're like, oh, we can get rid of him as champion now too.
That's ultimately my point. That's why I think it happened so quick without waiting to see, right? If this was John Jones, I think we would wait and see, right? I think we'd go through, definitely. I think we'd exhaust all options. With TJ, it seemed like, oh, sorry, dude, you're gonna have to give up that title.
It's the same thing with Colby Covington when he got stripped of his, like, you're not what the UFC wants at this moment. So they're just going to take it away from you and make it as hard for you to get that back as possible.
It's just so weird. I've said this before. I'll say it again. With the UFC, they're going to make a lot of decisions that were like, well, that's outright morally corrupt. Oh, that doesn't make sense. Oh, that's contradictive. I'll say this. You're a promoter with full power in a sport that's already dirty. Combat sports in general, promoting combat sports is dirty. You're going to lie a lot and do bad things. Just be consistent with it. I don't like right now how many things are just up in the air. We'll wait and see. Is Max Holloway going to be at featherweight moving forward? I don't know. Let's see if he loses that lightweight title fight. You know what I mean? Are we going to get rid of the flyweight division? I don't know. But here we're going to have Cejudo move up first, though, possibly, and try to now fight for TJ's vacant title. But if he loses, we'll still let him go back down. It's just a lot of this crap is all up in the air. That's what really pisses me off. It wouldn't piss me off if Dana was a little bit more old school Dana and just made a decision and was wielding about it, and then you're just like, okay, they don't get it, but this is the way they're going. I feel like now there's a little bit too much manipulation in terms of what they want to do. There's, of course, way too many titles and all that BS that's devaluing things, and that takes me to that sit-down. Did you, Brohams, happen to see Dana White with Yahoo's Kevin Ioli sitting inside of what I thought was Dana's office at the UFC PI, sitting in these weird rounded chairs? Maybe Ioli could have worn a jacket. That's for another topic for another time, but So Ioli thought that he challenged Dana about interim titles, about how they devalue the full title, about basically with the same opinion that all of us in the media have because we're using common sense. I mean, like, why are you throwing two titles on the big fights at UFC 236 for really no reason? Although Kevin put up a fight a little bit in the beginning, I thought he backed off too soon. And holy crap, did Dana White just walk himself into a corner and just make it, just turn this into a double down clown show? Is there any defense, Brandon, you can give to Dana White's defense about why we should have more interim titles and that there's only six guys in the world on the internet, including Ioli, who disagree? How about 6 million, bro?
Yeah, I can't go down that road with Dana. It's just like, we obviously know that interim titles don't mean anything anymore. Like we, like Mikey just said, we just proved this with Colby Covington that it holds zero value. All you're doing is making it seem like fighters want a title fight to make sure that they get more pay-per-view points. I think that's what he was trying to say. And it's like, no, the fighters just want as much money as they can get. And you're doing them a disservice by just saying an interim title fight will give you as many pay-per-view points when in reality, if you're just the main event, you're going to get, I mean, you should get the same amount of points. So I don't understand Dana's theory there. It's also funny to me that the same guy who's saying that more interim title fights is okay is also that opposed to adding more weight classes and adding more actual titles.
That's my point though. The contradiction is just stupid overall. And the one thing I'll give Ioli credit for is what you mentioned. He sort of was like, Dana, that's fine, but you're the boss. You can give, you can pay anybody, anything you want to pay them. You can give anybody pay-per-view points. So why would you float a title just to justify that? I would have loved to have been there. Maybe it would have ended my life as a credentialed MMA journalist, but I would have loved to have been there and just be like, Dana, listen to yourself. Look, this is the kind of stuff that makes me mad. And I think this Dillashaw conversation naturally flows into what do we do now with the bantamweight division? And we got a little bit of a clear answer to that this past weekend at UFC Nashville when Dana was interviewed with Megan O'Leary of the UFC. By the way, Megan O'Leary, fantastic on camera, really nice person, I've met her. I do have a pet peeve. When she says we when talking about the UFC, I hate that. Remember, did you see the sit-down she had on UFC.com when Dana signed
She's a paid employee, though.
I know, but she's got an ESPN mic flag, and shouldn't you try to act as a journalist, even if you're a UFC journalist on air a little bit in the middle and just not say we when you're talking about the UFC? Because then it throws all sort of idea that you could possibly be hitting Dana with curveball hard questions out the window when it's just we.
But it's – I mean, I'm not taking that as far as you
I'm
are.
I'm not going to die on that hill. I just mentioned it because that's what we do in this show, right? We're critics.
No, I understand, but it's like she's married to a UFC fighter and she works with the company as a quote-unquote reporter backstage. Like, I'm going to be okay with that, her saying we. I have more problems with fight fans saying we than that because
or
at least
any,
it makes
any
sense
fans
for
of
her.
Teams saying we. If you talk about your favorite baseball team and you're saying we, get over it. Are you on the payroll? You get nothing, right? Okay? So stop. Anyway, moving on. The point of what I'm trying to say here is he's asked by Megan. He says, oh, back then we didn't have a plan for flyweight and bantamweight, but we have a plan now. So tell me if I'm missing up the details, guys. Dana releases that his plan is that current flyweight champion Henry Cejudo is going to move up in weight and challenge number one bantamweight contender Marlon Moraes for that vacant bantamweight title, and that on the same card he's going to have Mr. O'Leary, Joseph Benavidez, against who?
against Pedro Munhoz.
Who's also a bantamweight?
No, I might have that wrong.
So
hold on.
Benavidez is a flyweight who probably should be getting a flyweight title shot, by the way, against Cejudo right now, since he beat Cejudo 2 years ago in their epic brawl, 3 years ago, excuse me. So he's saying that fight is also going to be on the card, Benavidez versus... Wow,
Formiga, I'm sorry.
Jussie Formiga, who just had a win over the weekend. With the idea that if somebody falls out of that bantamweight main event, they can plug them in. This doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because I don't think this answered, what the hell are we doing with flyweight? Did it? Did I miss it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, clearly it doesn't. The favorite part to me is that Dana says, I didn't have a plan before. Well, then what the hell are we going to do? Just sit here and just talk about it for another 3 months without anything actually happening? Like, what? I love the fight, by the way. I do love Cejudo against Moraes. I think that's going to be some hot fire in your face. But yeah, flyweight, it's just going to still dangle out there on the end. Like, nobody knows what they want to do with it. They can't decide if it's actually a draw or not. And yeah.
Yeah, they have to make a decision. This is so stupid that they're leaving it open. Or I think it's stupid that you'd give Cejudo a chance to become a two-division champion, but then have the safety valve that if should he lose, oh, he's still the champion down at flyweight. It doesn't make sense right now. It makes sense, again, super fights make sense when you have two champions who have more or less cleaned out their entire division, aka Amanda Nunes and Chris Cyborg recently, where the only fight that really makes sense big time for them is to fight each other. This is only making sense if you are also announcing we are ending the flyweight division. Then yes, of course, Cejudo, who just knocked out the bantamweight champion at flyweight, of course, should get that opportunity. Hedging like this is wrong, especially, tell me if I'm wrong, especially with Benavidez there, who beat Cejudo. It's natural that you would do that rematch now at flyweight. Benavidez coming off a win. He has what? One loss in the past, between now and the last time he lost to Demetrius Johnson, basically. The guy's been on fire. Let's run this back.
I used to like you in high school.
Remember when Benavidez said that to him?
Nine.
Did you hear that sound, Mikey? Do you remember when Benavidez said that?
I used to like you in high school.
He said that. I don't know what that means. I don't want to know what that means. It was gross. They had a little bit of a beef there. Run that back. And if bantamweight wasn't so sneaky loaded, I wouldn't care about this. But Brandon, we did a story this past week. You know, what do we do with the bantamweight division? And as you're looking at it, whether you want to do a four-man unofficial tournament or go as high as a 16-man official Grand Prix, bantamweight's got a really good mix of guys who could be next, former names, fun-ass guys. I didn't realize how sleeper and sneaky good this division is.
Ooh, if you want to go 16 deep?
I think you actually could right now. Look at the rankings.
You've got two guys in there who are – I mean, Cody Garbrandt's 0-3 with three straight knockout losses. You want to put him in this?
I'm saying if you did. I'm saying if you put Dominic Cruz in there. I'm saying if you put in
Tom's
bangers,
out for a year.
Okay, I'm just saying.
If you did a 16-man tournament and you threw Cody Garbrandt in there, that would be a very fun one to watch. I mean,
you got a Peter Yan in there. You've got some guys who could be next. You've got some in-between guys. Look, even if you just did top four with Pedro Munoz rising, with where we are with Asuncao being the veteran of this division going back a long way, with Marias ready to take over, I just don't think you need right now Cejudo. He's already a star. Yeah, he took that L trying to pull in Nikki Bella. Outside of that, he's already a star. He has everything you want. Are we going to give him two titles?
My idea originally when this first came out on Friday was you do four-man tournament, but with these names. You go Cejudo against Aljamain Sterling, who also is deserving of his chance. And then you go Moraes against Munoz. And then the winners fight each other for the title. I think that's the easiest way to handle this at this point, because it's like everybody else has a loss in their last two fights that you're talking about there, except for Peter Yan, but Yan still needs to prove himself against higher competition. Benavidez, I mean, if we end up doing that kind of style, then you just name Benavidez the champion, honestly. Like, he is the champion of 125 if Cejudo decides to move up.
Maybe he'll get an interim title shot on that same card. This is just such a – it's – I mean, come on, dude. Like, again.
This is number one bullshit.
It's the same thing about the conversation we're going to have with Conor McGregor. If you look back at this podcast going back 2 months, Conor McGregor's name is probably in the headline of every single show because it becomes fun to go, well, we don't know where he's going, but who would you want? Now that every single fighter's calling, can you just announce who he's going to fight? He's probably going to be back in July or August, right? Just announce it. Get us pumped up. Let us bang that drum now. Same thing with flyweight. Same thing with all of this. Brandon, the way they run business. I know they don't care. I know Dana just signed up for another 7 years on top. I know Ari just signed up for another 7 years. I know UFC on ESPN ripped up their deal and signed it for another 7 years. And now, sorry, pay-per-view providers, all pay-per-views are going through ESPN Plus moving forward. No longer are you getting that 50-50 cut. I get that they have the financial backing to do whatever the hell they want. They ain't scared about PFL. They ain't scared about Bellator. They ain't scared about one Gary Shaw in a tracksuit with Elite XE. They ain't scared, Brandon. They don't need my criticism. But why run business like this?
Because they think that as long as you're talking about us, that's great for business. And that's not wrong. I mean, as long as we keep talking about Conor McGregor, they keep getting more interest built. They keep having more people come to their site. They have people searching for them on Google. It keeps their name in people's mind at all times. So they're not going to stop doing business like this, quite frankly. Like, he even said on Saturday that those two fights that he mentioned, he just named them. He didn't say where they were going to happen or when. He just said, yeah, that's probably what we're going to do.
The ironic part is him saying, I didn't have a plan then, I have it now. He said it in such a voice that made you sound like he has no plan. Like, he's just, the first name's coming to his head. Oh, yeah, yeah, we'll probably do this and that. Probably. I don't know. Well, yeah, whatever. We'll see. Maybe. No, this is live. We're on live television, Dana. Like, seriously. Like, what are we doing here, Brandon?
Campbell, I have a question for you. So, do you think that since WME, IMG?
Yeah, man. Endeavor.
Do you think since they have taken over, do you think that there's a notable difference in how the UFC has been run?
That's a very interesting question.
Do you think there's a way more? I know we've had a recent surge of a lot of interim titles, but do you think that could be a product of the new ownership?
Yes. I got problems with this at all. I think there's a lot more cut off our nose to spite our face decisions. Short-term decisions with long-term results that they don't care about that they're making. But I think originally that was because, let's be honest here, 2016, their biggest year financially by friggin' far, right? Right in the middle of Conor McGregor fighting three times in a calendar year, and Rousey's still a thing. They sell for $4 billion. So 2017's hangover was going to be inevitable under any circumstance. It just so happened that Rousey, McGregor, and for the most part, Jones disappeared. So they took some L's financially. Really, if it wasn't for that Mayweather-McGregor fight, that would have been a hellaciously bad financial year. So I understand, Mike, the desperation that calendar year to try to make stars at last minute, to try to do anything to make Endeavor, WME-IMG, whatever you want to call them, feel like their investment made sense. Since then, though, and especially with signing the ESPN deal, they're peaking upward again. In fact, if you're going to drink the Kool-Aid, if you're going to listen to the Dana White, Megan O'Leary sit down and drink the full Kool-Aid, you're going to believe that they're as close as they've ever been, if not already there, to being a big four major sport. Which, if you remember, in like 2010, right before the launch of the Fox deal, was like Dana's big thing. We're going to pass NASCAR and hockey, and we're going to become a big four major sport. They think they're already there with this. My problem with that is they constantly make ridiculous decisions. Interim title is just another category. Stripping people of titles for no rhyme or reason. They have absolute power because they're their own league. But the decisions they make now, while financially viable and healthy again, it doesn't make any sense. So my big problem in the Endeavor era is the fact that we are now, how deep into it? Is it 2.5 years?
Yeah, just about.
We're going to be coming up on 3 years into it. Tell me how many outside of that UFC 25 documentary, that 15-minute short, which was a sit-down interview with Ari talking about his friendship with Dana and all, and how he bought the company, outside of that piece of video, which obviously was done in-house, how many interviews has Ari Emanuel or the other white dude Patrick or anyone else from Endeavor done, not just with MMA media, with any media talking about UFC?
Zero.
So it's sort of like Al Heyman in boxing, who rules a lot of boxing with an iron fist, with the PBC behind the scenes. Now Heyman's doing a lot of really good things. A couple years ago, there were times where you can't tell what the guy's doing because he never talks publicly. You don't know if he's good or bad for the sport. I get that feeling with Endeavor right now. Dana's still the front, but I feel like even there's times when Dana is almost carrying out company-issued instructions from behind the scenes, but not properly explaining them, so it makes them look like a clown show. And if they were struggling right now, you would understand. But they are in the damn driver's seat times 1,000. Like, guys, let's be honest about what this new pay-per-view thing means. There is no longer financial pressure on them to sell large pay-per-views, because ESPN's paying for them no matter what. That's why Rose Namajunas and Andrade can headline UFC 237 in Brazil, and no one really cares if he becomes a Pennington Nunez disaster all over again. Cause they getting paid. Actually, the pressure's on ESPN to load SportsCenter, load Mike and Mike, Get Up, all these other shows with as much UFC as possible to make sure the pay-per-views are moving. So when you are in this level of a driver's seat, can you get your ish together? Is that too much to ask?
No, I mean, it's interesting just because I want to see this succeed. And obviously we know they're going to succeed. They're going to make their money no matter what at this point, because like you said, ESPN Plus now, you have to have a subscription to it to get the damn pay-per-views, and they're going to set their prices based on what people's interests are, which I also find interesting. So like 237, if they don't think there's enough interest, they could drop that price to like $40. So
wait, hold on. I didn't know that. Are you telling me they can change the pay-per-view price depending on how much the card is expected to draw?
ESPN is now setting the prices for pay-per-views, not UFC. That's part of that new agreement that they made.
Wow. So are you saying this is another example, guys, of where the sport of MMA is going to dip their toes into the boxing water? You know what boxing does, right? Too many pay-per-views in general, but when it's Maymac or Maypac, hey guys, going to be $100 for no reason right now. Oh, and Canelo's next fight's going to be $100 for no reason right now. Is that where we're going now? When Conor comes back, it'll be $75, but when it's Aldo Volkanovski from a hut in a favela somewhere, then it's going to be like $33. No.
This solid gold pucker watch. 3 people died making this watch. You know what I mean?
No.
I mean, I don't hate it. I think that works better for everybody because, I mean, the people on those smaller pay-per-views aren't going to make as much money, but they need to be better draws. That's basically what it becomes, right?
Well, it helps grow to the casual fan, because now the guy who's not going to spend $65 on the middle of the road card might be willing to spend $30 on it.
Certainly,
you might
be able
to get 3 friends to spend $10.
Yes. Certainly, I like – okay, there's good and bad, obviously. Because certainly it's a development to have a card that's not worth $65 to have it potentially be $30 or $40. I'm with that. I'm just always sort of against the idea – look, Maypac, Maymac were special circumstances. But I'm against the idea of where we are heading in general on boxing, which is promoters going, well, they did pay $75 or $99 that time. I wonder if they'll pay it again. Oh, they will pay it again. They're suckers, all right? They have to see the fight unless they're a little bit younger and they're more technologically inclined and they've already been streaming it. In fact, they're streaming you deciding whether they should be streaming. No, they're streaming into your bedroom right now through that little peephole in the top of the camera and your laptop. Yes, they're streaming everything. So where were we on the – I didn't mean to start off the show with an anti-UFC rant. That's just where we got there. But there's some head-scratching decisions. They're going to get a lot of money moving forward. I want to close on this part, though, guys. The thing I said about ESPN and SportsCenter having much more of a reason to go deep on the sport right now. How much is that going to put pressure on ESPN's journalistic integrity?
I don't think it'll put much. I mean, there's not a ton of journalistic integrity anyway in MMA. Like, we kind of know that already. These guys get leaks for in fight information and all that kind of stuff. The only integrity left is telling these guys stories, you know? Like, because even UFC, like UFC and ESPN do this all the time anyway. A guy might be like 1-3 in his last 4 fights, but hey, let's show the highlight of that one win, guys. You know, so I mean, there's not a to me, it's not going to affect it much. It's going to just be like more of, hey, let's really promote this guy, even though he might not have the greatest record right now.
All right. And you're going to see more of these things. Yeah, I mean, Dana just did some sit down with ESPNW I saw where they're rehashing the whole the best decision I ever made was to say yes to women's MMA back when I'd been saying no. Like, I get that we're going to get a lot of that. We're going to get a lot of push and promotion. I guess the first sign of a scandal will really show us, because ESPN's gone down that road with the NFL before. Any network that has NFL rights is going to go down that road where you got to balance how critical you'll be, how much you're going to let your hot take artists say things. It's just going to be interesting because ESPN is so financially in on UFC. They are the UFC right now. ESPN is the – it's not like they have part of the promotional basket right now. Guys, they have every show, right? Every televised fight except for Dana White's series will be on ESPN, or will that too?
I don't know about that, but to me, it's like we kind of saw it a couple of weeks ago with the Jorge Masvidal thing. Like, they covered that pretty well, I thought. They gave you the story of what happened and Okamoto talking to George after the fight and everything. Like, I didn't think there was anything broken about their integrity there.
Well, you could argue, though, that playing that up is a good. It promotes fighting and fun highlights. But I guess I'm talking more about some internal, maybe a drug thing, maybe a – I mean, how would the John Jones thing had been handled?
Sure. So, I understand that.
It'll be interesting. All right. We got to get out of that. We got to roll into what we saw this past weekend, guys. UFC Nashville, welterweights at the top. We said coming in what? They might bang. They banged. All right? They banged. They banged the drum. It was action. It was fireworks. And it was Stephen Thompson winning every second of the first two rounds until 5 seconds to go. This guy, Anthony Pettis. Wow. So, bounce off the cage, Superman punch? Like, are you kidding me? And he knocked him cold. And it wasn't just a straight right Superman punch. There was some nuance. There was a hook to it. It was a planned shot that he thought would be there. At a time when I'm texting you or slacking you, Brandon, going, wow, I guess the weight difference is too big. Look at my man, Wonder Boy. Look at bloody and pagan. I mean, this shows you a lot of things in one instant. The potential heartbreak of the sport. That you're never out of a fight. And that Anthony Pettis may have saved the what's left of the elite portion of his career at age 32. Yeah, he could have been a modern day Diego Sanchez for the next 4 or 5 years. And we could have said, remember when? And we probably could have seen him win and loss against the Jim Miller types for a while. He just saved his high end career with that come from behind KO, Brandon Wise. True or false?
Was that his Darren Elkins moment?
What, he got a weird tattoo on his chest and grew a mullet out and acted like a weirdo?
No, I mean, that was Showtime. Like, that embodies everything that that dude has been for the last 7 or 8 years in this sport. Like, just how wild and crazy he is with his strikes. And he said after the fight that, by the way, that wasn't planned. He never practiced that in camp. Nothing. Just thought of that on the spot.
I didn't hear that quote.
Yeah. He threw a Superman hook, just outthinking Stephen Thompson, who is one of the greatest thinkers in the sport when it comes to space and speed. Like, the fact that Stephen Thompson kept that fight at distance, all 10 minutes of it, like, wouldn't allow Anthony to get in there and try and set up a takedown or anything, and then all of a sudden gets him up against the cage, thinks he's got him pinned, goes in with his chin. That was the problem, by the way, Mr. Bisbing. Didn't tuck his chin when he went in on that.
It's not open for debate. Uh-oh. The chin has to be tucked.
And Anthony just outthought him. It was crazy. Like, bounced off the cage, supermanned it into a hook. Just, yeah. To me, the weirdest part was that how the hell did it knock him out cold? Because he hit him on, it seemed like on the bridge of his nose, which isn't normally a spot where you get knocked cold from. But that and then the follow-up on the ground, God. I mean.
I think he hit him at just the right angle to kind of move the chin as his nose just got pressed into his brainstem. What a vicious shot. What a much-needed shot, as we can say, in the career of Anthony Pettis, who had alternated wins and losses for, what, 4 or 5 years, had come off the 3 straight defeats after his title loss, was really becoming more of a Johnny Hendricks, Henan Barão than he was anything else for a guy who was on the cover of a damn Wheaties box. And I don't even think, just like Derek Lewis has come from behind win over Volkov, yeah, he got a title shot out of it, but it's not like that changed who he was as a fighter. It changed who we thought of him for a short season. Anthony Pettis is still quasi-washed at 32. Hate to break it to you, but he's certainly still explosive. Moving up to welterweight for what? I thought it was the first time ever. They're saying the first time since early in his career. And like I mentioned, against arguably the most difficult opponent in the division, a guy who just controls space with weird angles and won every second of those two rounds. And to knock him cold, very few guys could have been able to do that. A little bit of a heartbreaker for my guy, Wonder Boy. One of the best quotes in the game. And when you look back at this run, he's now 1-3-1 since the first Woodley fight. And he's 36 now. When this was about as bad luck of a loss as you can have. I don't think he lost to Darren Till in that, and he pushed Woodley to the damn limit and blanked our guy Jorge Masvidal, and now he's got to take another step back in the title picture, which is now very crowded at the moment and very fun. But this doesn't mean Anthony Pettis is in the title picture now, right? What do we really do, Brandon, with this Pettis when considering he's willing and wanting to fight in multiple divisions moving forward?
I got nothing. Seriously. I was talking about this with Mikey before the show. I got nothing because he wants to go to 155. He's also now got some interest in 170. Dude, he can fight whoever he wants. To me, he's on that celebrity level where it doesn't matter. I don't need to see him fight for a title again. That it might be good for his bank account and it might be great for him, like, to feel that, but he's a celebrity at this point, yeah. In UFC, right? Like, like we talked about before, he was the first one on a damn Wheaties box. Like, he was the crossover. He was one of those first crossover potential stars for UFC. Use him as that. They kind of used him like that this week with Steven Thompson.
I'm glad you said that.
Just using him in that way.
I'm glad you said that because it's the Rich Franklin Memorial Award. It's when you get to that point in your career, you're not really a title contender, but we can keep matching you up against wash names and big main event opportunities. And if you stay by your phone long enough, you may F around and backdoor into a title shot just because you're the most healthy guy at the moment who can sell tickets. I agree with you. That's where he wants. And that's kind of what he said afterwards. He wants a rematch with RDA at welterweight. And if he can't get it, he wants the winner of Justin Gaethje, Edson Barbosa, who are fighting this Saturday in Philadelphia in a lightweight bout. Neither of those two potentials are like one or two steps away from a title. They're kind of in the middle of what we're saying. But I agree with you. Use him as a name. In fact, if Jose Aldo, which many people tweeted late Saturday, wants a go away fight and wants to do it in Brazil because he's got two left on his deal. Good Lord. Aldo Pettis is the super fight we always wanted back during a time when Dana didn't want to do that kind of stuff. And right now that they're quasi washed and they rely more on banging than hanging, I'm ready. I'm ready for that. Look, can we get in the budget to go to Brazil for that, please?
I love the idea of him bouncing between lightweight and welterweight to just take these fun stylistic matchups and to challenge the up and comers. Like you said, he's in that Rich Franklin zone where he's not going to go out there and knock out number one and win the title, but he will put on fun fights. So Conor congratulated him because he was joined Conor as one of the few fighters to win fights in three different weight classes. He's one of three fighters to win one in featherweight, lightweight, and welterweight. Brian, can you name the first one to do it?
I did see that Kenny Florian. I did see that my man was on that list.
Kenny Florian, yep. Kenny Florian, Kenny Florian, woo! Top contender in the lightweight division, cause he finishes fights, no decision.
That's my guy right there. Yeah, I saw that. Was the other one BJ?
No, it was Connor,
Pettis.
Connor Pettis and
it.
Kenny. But we had to shout out our guy here, so.
And by the way, I call that the Rich Franklin Memorial, place to go in your twilight, cause let's not forget real quick, after Franklin had lost to Anderson Silva twice, this is who he fought down the stretch. Dan Henderson lost a split decision, beat Vanderlei in a fun fight by decision, got knocked out by Vitor Belfort, knocked out Chuck Liddell with a broken arm, lost a decision to Forrest Griffin, took a decision from Vanderlei Silva, and got knocked out by Kung Lee. All six of those, I think, were main events or at least co-main, and all four of them were catchweight bouts, and all six were pretty damn fun. So let's not be against that for Anthony Pettis as we move forward. And you just mentioned the start of what could be a long conversation. Or will it be a short one, Brandon? And the conversation goes like this. Everybody wants him some Connor, bro.
Hold on. Can I pause this for 2 seconds? Because I have an interesting question for Mikey, who was not here with us last week for our Michael Bisping discussion. And I was told that we came off kind of poorly in our discussion, that Michael Bisping deserves a lot more credit than we gave him. So in that vein, is Anthony Pettis a Hall of Famer?
In real Hall? Okay, we gotta simplify it. In the UFC Hall of Fame or in a real Hall of Fame?
UFC Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah, dude, again, okay? Again, Matt Serra went 11-7 and has one big win on his resume. Yes. So if you've looked at a UFC title, you're probably in the UFC Hall of Fame.
The UFC Hall of Fame is basically, are you a company guy? Like,
nailed
are
it.
You a company guy? You're in.
Okay, but you think that Michael Bisping would be a Hall of Famer regardless.
I do. I mean, he won the Ultimate Fighter 2. He's the first British-American champion. And he has, what did we come up with? It was the second most UFC fights, I believe.
He's tied for most wins, and he has the most fights total, I think.
He got passed out by Cerrone recently, so he's like second in every category that has to do with longevity.
Yeah, so to me, winning the Ultimate Fighter 2, being around this long and being relevant, if from the point where he got into the UFC, he was basically 1 to 2 fights away from a title at any point. Now, granted, he didn't win those big fights in the beginning of his career, but he came back around and won it at the end as a massive underdog where he knocked out Rockhold. I think he has to be in there for the sport.
Okay.
The real debate is to both of these questions is if we're using the restrictions or rules or whatever of a real Hall of Fame, would he get in? And in any form of a USC Hall of Fame, he just gets in because it's a company man and he's funny. But Brandon, go ahead. You were gonna counterpoint here.
Well, I was just gonna say, so in that vein, would you say that Anthony Pettis falls into that category as like a true Hall of Famer? Because we've talked about it here for the last few years. He's been up and down. We don't really know where he is. But at the same time, he had one of the biggest highlights ever in WEC when he knocks out Benson Henderson to win that belt.
Did not knock him out. Just bite your damn tongue. Did not knock. 5-round classic.
He then becomes the UFC lightweight champion, only holds the belt for a short amount of time. But his career arc follows, to me, a similar one to Michael Bisping, except for the fact that he actually got to the peak in the prime of his career.
Yeah, he just has some tough losses. Like the three fight stretch where he lost to Dos Anjos, Alvarez, and Barbosa, those are three tough losses. They probably, all of them could have went either way, but it's tough. It's very tough to say he's on the fringe. I think maybe one more big win or a couple decent wins throughout his career, you can make the case for it. But I don't know.
He doesn't get in a real hall. I'll answer for you. If this was the Baseball Hall of Fame standards or even the pro football, he would fall just short. And here's why. One defense of his UFC lightweight title. No defenses of his WEC title granted. The WEC folded after he won it. But what I'm saying is it's not like he has one of those things that you can lean on. And even though he had that great stretch after his debut loss in the UFC to Clay Guida where he won 5 in a row and the 5 were some pretty damn good names. Outside of this come from behind win against Thompson, I don't really know what else you're going to say but the Wheaties box. So I think there's a little Don Mattingly in him. There's got to be a line. And I think he's right behind that line where I think Bisping has a better argument, Brandon. Because really? Bisping has the longevity and he won a championship, I think it gives people like Mikey and pundits a sort of something to stand on, certainly. Because he has the stats. He has the compiler of being of 3,000 career hits, right? He's got that going for him. And he won an MVP. That's really what his career said. But to you and me, like, I don't think Chipper Jones is a Hall of Famer. People hate me for that. I'm a Mets fan.
How do you, what?
I'm just saying he's the Hall of Very Good. He ain't the Hall of Fame.
Okay, we need to have a separate talk about this.
Yeah,
later.
Yeah, we can totally have that. If you're some Atlanta Braves homer, we can totally go down this road with you.
He also cheated on his wife
right at the peak of his career too and blew his marriage. But look, my point on this is, there's a lot of negatives there against Chipper, but I get it. So I think Bisping's one of those guys where if he's your cup of tea, yes. But when you really peel back the skin of that onion, Brandon, like you and I did last week, you might cry a little. It's a little smell in there. When your biggest win is outside of Luke Rockhold is Matt Hamill. You might have to. And I know TRT. I know TRT of Belfort broke his heart in 2013, like he also did to Rockhold and probably broke his eyeball on top of that too. But yeah. All right.
That's the scariest human in the world, TRT V4.
Yes. Yes. He should be. There should be a video game where he's the boss at the end of it, right?
The final fight in UFC 4.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry to get us off track with this. I just thought it's an interesting discussion to think of where Anthony Pettis ends up falling because he's, like we just said, he's going to be in celebrity fight mode now. He's not going to be looking for title fights, I don't think, unless UFC decides to push him that way. But even without another title fight or another title run, to me, his career is, like you said, close, if not in, like, a real Hall of Fame MMA career.
Yeah, he's on the other side though. He would need a couple more of these legendary names to add on my opinion. But you know what I think he does do? I think this win, added with his notable flaws, I'm ready to dive right into this Conor McGregor conversation quicker than you wanted to or that I planned to. But we talked about Cowboy Cerrone being the perfect Conor opponent coming up because there's no get well fights in UFC, but a limited washed veteran who fights one style. Pettis is kind of like a upgrade from that. Pettis is like the perfect Donald Cerrone to match against Conor right now. He's the perfect sort of thing. He's a flawed name fighter who could win against Conor 100%, just like Cowboy could, but offers in some ways the perfect style for Connor to sort of line up as a sniper counter shot guy and get a big win at a hot time against a former champion right now. You want a main event of pay-per-view and not need an interim belt, not need anything? God, that's a sexy matchup.
I like it a lot. The thing I don't want to see that is at 170, because I just don't think that's going to look great for either if that gets deep into the fight, because they're both going to gas pretty quick. I thought that was part of like what happened on Saturday was Pettis was done. Like he was, to me, he seemed gassed. He was getting pushed around the cage. He was keeping a really weird pace in it. So he just threw something because he had nothing left. And that was like why he was able to knock out Stephen Thompson that easily, was because he just threw everything he had behind that punch. So to me, that's a fight at 155 all day, every day. Book it for July right now if we can, because like you said, to me, Pettis is a lot more dangerous than Cowboy at this point. Like he's got more power and he's got more like built into him. Like his wrestling is going to be, could be a problem for Connor if he actually decides to like use it this time and he's able to get in into range on him. Connor, on the other hand, can keep that fight on his feet. Then that becomes a crazy brawl out of nowhere, because can you imagine those two getting into the phone booth and just swinging? Like, that's the kind of fight I would expect to see when those two, if those two link up at 155.
Yeah, it has to be at 155. It would give Connor a little bit more of an advantage, which I think you should do in this spot, marketing or booking wise. But I think you're right. And I think the whole fight would be Connor trying to avoid it becoming a full on brawl and trying to stay in counter punching, you know, distance mode to try to land the big one and remind us that he does have fight changing or fight ending power, something he had nothing of against Khabib Nurmagomedov or Floyd Mayweather. I know different sport, different situation, bigger gloves, but was it confidence issue? Was it stamina issue? Was it Khabib just emptied his gas tank issue? You tell me. But Connor was not Connor in that fight against Khabib. If Connor can be Connor again, this is a hell of a fight that could go either way, that Connor could and arguably should win. And I think he would be the betting favorite, even with Pettis coming off of this win, because you saw Pettis pretty much get dominated there. And I think in his other fights, yeah, he pushed Tony to the limit, Tony Ferguson in their fight of the year, contender or winner, depending on your choice last year. But he was the guy absorbing the bigger blows. It's perfect. It's perfect right now. You got to make that. I think it's so perfect. And Brandon, if you don't make that, what do you make? Because you said last week, man, I'm sick of every damn show we got to try to throw new names into the pot of who Connor might or should or is going to fight next. And since that episode, two things have happened. One, I think I actually agreed with you. And two, we got more names in the damn pot right now because people are doing backflips in, because now Tyron Woodley's tweeting and putting out videos like a madman. Tyron Woodley, he's not going to fight you. The only chance in hell he ever was going to fight you is if he had all the house money and he tried a no-lose, I want to become the first three-division title holder at welterweight. That dream's over. Go back and record Tell Me How My Ass Tastes or whatever your new rap song is. You're never getting Connor, ever. So get out of this conversation. I love you, Tyron Woodley. You know I love your mama, because that scene they showed with Kamaru and Tyron's mama, I think needs to be replayed more often in this dirtbag face the pain neck tat sport, because that was a genuine moment. Outside of that, you ain't getting Connor. This time, Brandon, I'm going to ask you for the last time on this show until they announce it. Who will fight Connor next?
I need a Nate drop like right now, because Nate just posted something kind of hinting at these kind of things.
What? What?
Everybody's on steroids. The whole UFC. All right. Everybody.
That works too.
You're on steroids.
Oh,
no, you're on steroids.
Yeah, Conor McGregor, you're taking everything I work for, motherfucker. I'm gonna fight you. You know what's the real fight? What's the real money fight? It's me, not these clowns that you already punked at the press conference. Don't no one want to see that. You know you beat them already. That's an easy fight. You want that real right here? Hey, and
unfortunately, we can't talk like that.
Yeah, we can't talk like that in this show either. So we got to get off of that. Are you saying that next will? Because I think I saw Adiel Helwani kind of pointing in this direction on Twitter. Are you saying the damn trilogy's next?
I'm saying that Nate Diaz just tweeted/Instagrammed this. Khabib's is how he spelled Khabib's name. Khabib's hiding scared because I slapped the bleep out of him. Connor already got his ass beat twice. Where the bleep you at, Khabib? P.S. Poirier is a bleep.
I love that P.S. That's great. So this happened, right? Because Nate's been talking about this for a while, that at some point on the street, he approached Team Nurmagomedov and slapped Khabib.
Where I come from, well, you know, people like that get slapped.
That was
no,
Nick,
that was that was at a like not underground, but like a lower end MMA event where they had teammates fighting on the same card, and Nate tried to approach.
That's
Khabib,
right. That's
and
right.
Broke out into like a fracas.
And Nate's saying he said, "Sorry, I got confused." He said it on the street after that press conference that he walked out of that he slapped that Khabib's not about that life. That he slapped him and nothing happened. So that tweet is hilarious. But are you getting out of that tweet that UFC is calling Nate? And after they claim he turns down every other fight, that we're getting closer for the trilogy next. Is that what the hell you're saying?
Yes, this is, that post is 100% Nate negotiating through social media to say, oh, you guys really want to make this Conor fight now? Oh, my price just went up, guys. I'd rather fight Khabib. I deserve to fight Khabib. Don't talk to me until you make this fight happen or bring that $4 or $5 million paycheck into my account because that's the only way I'm fighting Conor again. There's no reason to, in his mind, because like
you
said, he beat Conor twice.
I think there's no reason right now to book this trilogy right now, because I think the trilogy is a lottery ticket that's sitting out there that you would do in more desperate times. And Brandon, what are desperate times? When Conor's coming off of two losses, which he could be pretty soon, honestly, because he's coming back at lightweight, which is an all killer division, and he, from what Dana says, wants to get back at Khabib and get back in the title picture, isn't looking to become this celebrity Anthony Pettis, Rich Franklin, twilight of my old guy career. So why would you go forward with that now? I got to take that off the table. That's a pay-per-view record shattering one when you need it. You don't need that right now.
You are spot on. In my opinion, I don't think Conor should fight Nate right now. I need to have them both fight one other person before they come back. So Nate's been gone for so long, I don't want to see a rusty Nate face Conor. Conor, again, gone not as long, but still, like, I don't want to see these two guys go in there and be rusty. I want to see them throw down like 1-2, like their first two matches. You can't, who knows what Nate has been doing besides trolling Khabib like crazy. Like, who knows what type of training he's doing? I want to see him when he returns. If we are lucky enough to get him returned, I want to see him coming in full strength, full gas tank, everything ready to go.
Well, who do you want him to face then?
You can literally have him fight anyone. You both give both of them a tune-up fight on the same card.
Look, it's not going to be Cowboy. We've established that, right, Brandon? Doesn't Cowboy just have a fight? Did he just book a fight?
We were going to talk about that later, is that how Cowboy's now out of the picture because he's going to face Hal Iaquinta at UFC Ottawa on May 4th, the same day as Canelo Jacobs. So good luck getting people to look at that fight.
Are you serious? The same day? That's Cowboy just being the mercenary who he actually is deep inside. That's just like, I want to fight as much as I possibly can before I'm washed. Let me cash all these checks to pay for my booze on the boat. And pretty much. I mean, that's how he lives his life and pay for the camper. Wow. Okay. So he's off the table, and I don't hate that fight. It'll be fun, but it's kind of meaningless in a lot of ways because nobody wants to fight Al, understandably, and he's not going to get a title opportunity, so you book that. I think Pettis just became the new Cowboy. I don't think there's anybody else, unless Tony Ferguson is going to get his life cleaned up and you're going to do a summer Conor Tony and put a vacant title on the line and say the winner will fight Khabib, which you can't really do because didn't you just say Max Poirier, the winner, is fighting Khabib with an interim title? So I guess you can't do that, Campbell. This is why we can't have nice things in the UFC, Brandon, because you don't suddenly need to do Max Dustin anymore.
Did he say that though?
Yeah, Dana said that.
He said that the winner of Max Dustin will fight Khabib this fall.
Yes, he did.
Because I thought the idea was that we were talking about a few weeks ago was that the winner of that would then fight Conor in theory, and then that's how Conor gets back into the Khabib picture.
So that's the way we booked it. But what Dana said in both the Ioli interview and I believe the Olivi interview, in response to the idea of there be too many interim titles, he was basically saying, look, the interim title means you're fighting for the title next. The winner of Max Dustin will be fighting for the title next.
Except it doesn't.
Except it doesn't, because this is how this is what you can do with absolute power. You can do whatever the hell you want. So that's why we got issues right now. Oh God. So, in the end, the last thing we had said last week, as the Connor turns, is that we said Max Dustin winner should fight Connor, International Fight Week, short turnaround, and then the winner gets Habib. If it can't be Tony, and Tony's got problems right now, let's not fool around with that. I guess that's still the best strategy. You don't need to throw Pettis in there for absolutely no reason. If you're the UFC, you want to maximize what Connor brings to the table right now. And if he really wants to fight for a title again, yes, Max for the interim title. If Max beats Dustin, or if Dustin wins, either or, this summer, rematch, main event, International Fight Week, is the best way to book Conor McGregor moving forward. And this will be the last time we have this conversation per Brandon Wise until they actually announce it. I'm going to put Pettis in my number two slot. Pettis is the second most logical best fight to make for Conor right now.
Okay. I just, while we're talking about this, and like you said, this will be the last time I bleeping talk about this because I'm so tired of it. And this is the kind of ideas that pop into my head when we keep talking about this. You know who needs a fight right now, BC?
This guy?
You know, they're selling you all wolf tickets, people.
That guy?
No. The guy who was allegedly an interim champion at welterweight this year, who went to Vegas
what
with a bullhorn.
What are you doing right now?
That would be bad news for Connor.
You're telling me that won't sell? With the amount of, anti-energy against Colby Covington that will all, that entire arena will be cheering for Connor.
But it makes no sense. Connor's not a welterweight contender.
Down.
Hold on. And what nothing makes sense, BC.
I get that.
Nothing.
But, and Mikey's right. I think Colby would lay on him.
Lay on him. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough fight for him. But what about one of the two winners of, or what about the winner of this weekend's card? Both of those, Connor would make fun fights against.
Oh my God. It's a step back. It's a step back. And like, if you're going to do that, you might as well do Pettis, right?
Yeah. Because that's what we talked about before, was that if he fights Cowboy, you're getting the kind of like flashiness that you get from a Gaethje, except with less CTE. So it's just like, yeah, I'd rather see him fight Pettis than fight either Barbosa or Gaethje, because one, Pettis is not nearly as dangerous as either of those guys right now. So you want to save Connor and make sure that he gets back into another fight where you're going to be able to sell the hell out of it.
Connor would never fight Gaethje unless Connor's 100%. If Connor was who Pettis is right now, right, where you're kind of washy, you can fight Gaethje. If Connor was the champion, you can fight Gaethje. Any other sense you're going to get the guy, you're going to get Connor potentially hurt for no reason.
All right, I'm done talking about this. I'm sorry. I got the Colby idea in my head, and I needed to tell you guys before I forgot about it.
Yeah, and then we dropped a Shiite on it. Yeah, all right, let's get out of there. Let's move forward. Anything else we're going to take from this weekend's Nashville card? Stephen Thompson takes a step back. We talked about Pettis. I'm not moved by the heavyweights in this co-main event. Curtis Blades laid on Justin Willis and turned into heavyweight John Fitch. I will not talk about this anymore.
That's your boy.
Please get me out of that. We can talk about whatever you want, but I'm going to talk about what I want right now. And that's women's flyweight Macy Barber, the hot prospect who's, 22 years old and came in here against JJ Aldrich, who kind of had become the prospect killer, the one who could expose you with that toughness and that southpaw style. She had taken a decision for Pollyanna Viana. She had sort of beaten a couple other people. You're like, could this girl be something? And guys, for one round, I was getting Rousey Holm flashbacks all over again, because Barber, who's got sort of a muscular kind of Rousey build to her, was coming in over aggressive and was eating nothing but straight left crosses, Holly Holm style, from JJ Aldrich, and had no form of adjustment. Her nose was getting bloody. Her face was getting puffy. She was coming back with nothing. But give that corner and give Macy Barber credit, because when she made that adjustment in round two and the power started connecting, it turned into a vicious ass kicking down the stretch. I think we got to see everything from Macy Barber in this fight. We got to see her holes, but we got to see her repair it in real time pretty quickly. Remind you that the power's there. Remind you that the cocky personality's there at the young age. We got a player here. I'm glad that this happened on the screen rather than like in a gym somewhere, because I think she grows from this moment way more than had this moment happened, 3, 4, 5 years from now.
I think seeing a fighter make a real-time adjustment like that is one of the best things that you can see from a young fighter, like with their camp giving her the cues to make these changes, and then she goes out and actually effectively makes them. That shows you that she's very smart mentally, and she's out there thinking her stuff through, and I think that's one of the best things that you could see in young fighters. You see guys like Kamaru in his last fight where he took that game plan that was working and executed it to a T, listened to his coaches to what they were saying, and came down with a dominant victory.
Yeah, that was the thing that we were just talking, that BC was just talking about, is like she was getting crushed in that first round, and to be able to get to your corner, relax again, because you got to have a feeling at that point like, oh no, I'm getting beat, and that's like not great. I might panic here and just start throwing haymakers. No, to get calmed back down, listen to your coaches and restructure the game plan around to be able to get inside. That was just flawless to me. And to at first in that fight, I was getting Bellator vibes because I was like, oh no, please don't be an Aaron Pico right now and get destroyed and just fall apart. But no, she pulled it around and that was awesome to see. The thing that was craziest to me, and it wasn't even one of the finishing punches that knocked Aldrich. Well, she didn't get knocked out, but she went out on her shield covering up. She got in on that tie clinch and she threw that elbow like John Jones throws. That was just vicious to me. And if she's able to incorporate that more into her game, I mean, she's going to be a star in this sport and she's going to start injuring people with that.
She's powerful. And I was wrong. She's 20, not 22. She's 20. I mean, look at this. Think about the last time we have seen people of her age in such a prominent position, right? Like that's like, it's almost like early Vitor Belfort type stuff to see somebody this young. And I know she only fought JJ Aldrich, not in the title level yet. But, you know, Sage Northcutt crumbled on the higher stage each time he tried to step up. It's natural. You sort of need this age to sort of take these early L's. You give Max Holloway a lot of credit for what he's done. He kind of took early L's like this on the big stage against guys who became names. Her to adjust in real time, like you said, show the mental toughness. She's going to be really hard to beat. This seems like her division flyweight. I mean, she could have been a terror, a strawweight, if she could have made 115 consistently, and she said afterwards that she doesn't think she can make that anymore. But man, this is a division that doesn't have a lot of big names outside of Valentina on top. This could get fun, guys. If she goes on the kind of run where you're like, can't hold her back anymore, right? If she's suddenly 21 and we're going, time for some Shevchenko Macy, let's do this. It could get really fun. I know, pump the brakes a little on that, BC, but this was the type of win, guys, that I think makes you more of a believer on who she is on the inside. Because yeah, everybody's going to take those early L's. It happens. Be wise. You do some sparring. I bet you probably took some L's in there, but maybe you lost consciousness. Maybe, you know, somebody tapped you out. I mean, Stipe tapped. We know that against Overeem. Are you tapping out? Are you taking jiu-jitsu right now? What's going on?
I have not sparred. I told you this. I haven't sparred, and I've only done boxing, not jiu-jitsu. All right. Anyway.
I'll put on the gloves. We'll do an all state of combat edition, all right?
Please come down here so that we can spar. Please come down here.
I heard that's the pre-fight to the UFC 4 Lauderdale card.
Yes. Don't put an interim
in the parking lot.
Yeah, don't put an interim on that. Come on. Interim host Brandon Wise. Yes. All right.
My point is, the problem with what you said though about Macy and the title picture is like, there is nobody in the flyweight division right now. So how many more fights do you give her before you start talking about, hey, we might have to throw her into the deep end against Shevchenko?
You're right. I mean, if she was at strawweight, let's be honest, guys, that's a killer division. There's a lot of names. There's a lot of, you know, names that are becoming washed up where you're like, okay, I'd see her against that name. I mean, I'm calling up the rankings right now. Who do we actually have at flyweight? I mean, that's why Jessica Ai, who, by the way, I support Jessica Ai getting this upcoming title shot against Valentina Shevchenko. It's a decently marketable fight. I say decent because, you know, Shevchenko is not a big mover, but there's some fireworks there. Jessica, I can talk. There's nobody else outside of Sarara Eubanks who, I mean, Joanna's moving back down. Who do we got
Mikey's
here?
Mikey's got an idea. Mikey's got an idea.
Oh, my favorite fighter, Paige VanZant.
Oh, wow. They get that girl hurt. You do not want to hurt PV.
Yep.
Here's the thing. If you're ESPN, you're smart. Paige VanZant should fight every 3 months and she should never fight a live body. Right?
No, you're right. I mean, you want to get her wins. And I mean, she's coming off a huge victory over Rachel Ostovich where she broke that girl's damn arm. So She should get somebody kind of respectable.
You know what? She should get, if we're the right kind of fight for Macy Barber, not yet, but the right kind of fight is a Roxanne Modafferi, somebody who you're not going to stop, who's going to be there the whole fight. It's going to be awkward. That's probably a good test of where she really is. I could see a Liz Carmouche type fight down the road. You know, a couple of these blown up, strawweights, the Montana De La Rosa fight. Don't do that too soon. Because De La Rosa could, that's my girl. She could finish her. I mean, she could tap her. But that, look, Antonina Shevchenko, Valentina's sister, she can fight. This is okay. Okay, I'm back in now. I'm back in now. All right?
Roxy is fighting Shevchenko's sister soon. I don't remember what card it is, but they're fighting.
And I'm not in on the Roxy business anymore, right? I need less Roxanne in my life. Nice person, happy warrior. But please, let's move on. What we also saw this weekend, dudes, interesting, all Brazilian flyweight fight. Jussie Formiga apparently putting himself in contention for some form of a title shot there, whether it be flyweight or bantamweight, nobody really knows. But he gave Deiveson Figueiredo a first defeat. Figueiredo had a horrific haircut. Formiga turned into Brock Lesnar the first two rounds and was just all wrestling ground and pound, and then sort of had to kind of backdoor his way to a finish there as Deiveson woke up. I don't know if I really want to see either of these guys again, but it was one of the better fights on this card to watch. You got any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is just kind of what Jussie is at this point. He's a ground specialist who just destroys you with his wrestling and doesn't give you a chance. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Baby John Fitch is not great for business.
We have too many John Fitches these days. And we also saw your boy Weirdo Bob Ross get a big win, Luis Pena.
Did you see him trying to, like, handshake DC after the fight?
No.
It was so awkward because he, like, I don't remember if he just blew his nose into his hand and then tried to shake DC's hand, but there's like a couple of video clips going around where you could see DC's expression go, ugh, no, I don't want to touch your hand now.
That doesn't work for me.
I could be fat, I could not have a six pack, but my dick works. My dick works.
That does work. Hey, happy 40th birthday to Daniel Cormier, who will apparently not retire. Because Dana said he's going to fight three times this year. I'm like, Dana, it's March already, all right? The guy's turned. He's like, no, he'll fight three times this year. Now, Dana did tell Aioli that he sees DC fighting Lesnar, Stipe, and Jones on the way out. Probably a best case scenario, brothers. We'll see what happens.
Is it?
For the combination of marketing, giving DC the potential to make money and extend the legacy of his career, give Stipe another chance, deserving after the run he had been on, and give us Jones DC 3 on the way out. Yeah, that's a perfect ending to DC's career. Okay. And for everyone involved.
Whatever you say.
Wow. Wow, this guy, this hater, Brandon Wise right here. Wow. All right, bros. What else we got in the news cycle here before we preview this weekend's fisticuffs in Philly?
The only thing we haven't talked about yet was that Jose Aldo almost did not make this UFC 237 card because he got hospitalized with a bacterial infection over the last week.
Did they call the fight?
There was rumors that it might be, but now he's been released and the fight will still be on. It was just like a really weird situation that Combate reported about.
Hey, Jose, here's a piece of advice. Call in sick, bro. You can't gain anything from this Alexander Volkanovski fight but a concussion, okay? I'm not saying you're going to lose. What I'm saying is you're going to walk through heck. For what reason? To please the Brazilian fans that you're a co-main event for? Look, if this is not an interim title fight and this is not your retirement fight, which is not because he has two fights left on his deal and then apparently he's going to become a pro boxer. Is that the last thing he said? Is that where we're going with this? Regardless, why are you fighting Volkanovski? This just shows you that Aldo's like, I cannot wait to get out of this contract. Can you be a little more creative, UFC, and actually like either set him up on a path to a title or exactly what we're talking about, Pettis. Give me fun fights on the way out against other legends.
Yeah, I mean, this Volkanovski fight does not make any sense for Jose Aldo. It makes sense for Volkanovski because if he wins, then you can clearly say, hey, he deserves a shot at the featherweight title. But Jose, like we talked about a few weeks ago, even if he wins this fight, they're not going to put him in a title fight and then let him retire if he wins the title. Like, it makes no sense. Dana has always said that he doesn't want to have a vacated title because of exactly what happened with GSP. So it's like, what are we getting accomplished here? Especially with Volkanovski going to Brazil to fight Jose in his backyard. Like, to me, this feels like I'm going out with one last shot. And if this actually is his last fight, I don't understand it.
Well,
because they're not going to, are they going to take him back to Brazil in like November or October?
It appears that's the way. And it's obviously, it's really, I don't know. I want to say it's UFC not showing a ton of respect for his brand name and what he brings, but I guess in some ways they're giving Volkanovski the chance at the rub of beating a Jose Aldo, which would fast track him into the title picture. But again, I just think there's smarter ways to use legends' names on the way out, like giving GSP a chance to fight Habib makes too much sense, but you're either a company man or you are not. We've seen it a million times. Hey, also in the news, guys, Holly Holm at 37. Signs a 6-fight deal with the UFC. Mikey, will she get to all 6 fights?
I feel like that's all. I don't know, because she hasn't fought much as of late. It was 1 or 2 fights last year, I believe.
It was the Betch Correa fight, I think, was her last one, no?
Yeah. I feel like she hasn't been fighting as much lately, and the fights are kind of drying up for her, seeing as she's beaten a lot of people in those divisions.
Let's not underestimate her name value. And I'm going to say this. Let's not underestimate. She still kind of got it. She's still who she was at the beginning. Like, she was never as good as she was against Ronda, because that was a perfect storm, perfect style matchup, and she fought the perfect fight, right? So she was never that. Like, I remember at that moment, we're like, she's the greatest athlete in female combat sports history. No, she's really not, okay? Had a great decorated boxing career during a time where people cared about women's boxing even less than they do now. Great win over Rousey. But she's not really fallen off or taken too much of a – she's still – to me, she's still as dangerous as she was in the beginning, which means at any point she can win another title. I don't think she slowed down with age. The fight to make still is Amanda Nunes. That's the last name Nunes needs on her record. But I feel like Holm may end up outlasting Nunes, and I'm going to say a weird kind of prediction here. Holm's going to win another championship in the UFC before she retires. There's no depth at featherweight. What would stop her outside of Amanda Nunes? What would stop her?
Cyborg. She's 2-4 in the last 3 years.
I'm feeling it, man. She doesn't lose bad.
Those are some tough. They're tough losses that she took. Shevchenko
outthought her and landed really clean counter shots and was really smart. But
the Cyborg fight was tough, and the Durandamine fight was close.
That was a weird fight. Really, really, Holly should have won that. Looking back, I'd like to know what really happened in that. Was this just a weird style matchup? Was Holly not at her best? She should have beat Jermaine right there.
She's coming off a win against Megan Anderson at 225 last June. I can't believe you think that she's going to win a title.
I think she can, because what if Nunes leaves? I think Holm could be it's not like Bantamweight's a hot division. We know Featherweight's dead.
I guess. I just don't see it, man. She might still have it, but she's also, what, 36 now?
37.
She's just went through a divorce, and you guys know, people do the best work of their career. Like, if you're a rock star or something coming off of a divorce, you're inspired.
Sure.
Have you seen her on Instagram at all?
But then why did they get rid of the Aspen Ladd fight?
Oh, because they're getting ready to fight Nunes. Because that was a bad idea. You give Aspen Ladd an unnecessary loss, or you give Holm a loss before you can use her in a title fight. It's not good matchmaking.
They still haven't booked Aspen Ladd another fight yet, by the way.
They don't care. They certainly don't care. Hey, my guy Rockhold.
I'm sorry. They booked Aspen Ladd's going to fight Soraya Eubanks on May 18th.
Ooh,
apparently,
I like that one a lot.
That's Kevin Lee Rafael dos Anjos card.
And I also like that fight, too. Kevin Lee, RDA, welterweight. Kevin Lee moving up in May.
Yeah, buddy.
Sign me up. All right, so Luke Rockhold is officially moving up to 205. It's actually going to happen. And he's going to fight sort of division gatekeeper guy Jan Błachowicz. All right. I fear for Luke's chin at 205, man. I really do. He's the ultimate what-if for me, dude. He's the ultimate guy who has everything, but he's missing something. He's missing a key intangible. I don't think it's focus. I don't think it's necessarily chin, although it certainly was against like Romero just ended him. But there's something he's missing. Like there's a computer chip in the back of his skull that's not there, that's presenting him from being all he can be. This guy should be a pound for pound ranked guy for a decade. I mean, it was TRT Belfort that took it away from him. It was underestimating Rockhold, Bisping in the rematch, but man. You're not drinking from the same cup I am?
No, we've had this argument for the last 2 years. No, I don't think Luke Rockhold is as good as you ever thought he was.
Mikey?
I'm going to play middleman here. I would like to see how this next fight plays out. He's big. Like, he has a big frame. I would like to see how he fills out with that extra 20 pounds on him, see what that does to his power, see how it affects his cardio. I think this next fight is what you go off of, because if he goes out there and he looks great and he puts on the 20 pounds that he can add, and maybe his chin's a little bit better than we've seen in these last three fights where Bisping caught him and Romero caught him, maybe the extra weight gives him that Pettis energy where he has a little extra energy in the tank.
I mean, my thing is, you're not going to see much from this fight, I don't think, because to me, John Błachowicz is the running equivalent of a warm body at 205, like, because he was supposed to be the gatekeeper for who? Santos last fight? I mean, Rockhold better beat the brakes off of this dude if he's what you think he is, BC.
Yeah. I mean, look, the damage actually isn't that bad when you look back he's only fought like twice since the Bisping fight. So the damage isn't that bad. Handled Branch, but then just got highlight reel finished by Romero. And guys, that's what happens. I don't think it was necessarily a chin breakdown. I still think it was just a stupid loss against Bisping because he had dominated him so much in the first fight. And the second fight was a last minute change. I think he got rattled a bit by the trash talk. And then he just gave up the fort right there. But, there's still time. Brandon, look. The Baron era is not over. All right. Henan Barão, I still believe. Luke Rockhold.
What?
Okay. Luke Rockhold. All right. The Henan Barão thing's a joke. Rockhold, I don't know. I don't think he can beat a Gustafsson. I don't think he can beat any of those clowns like Johnny Walker Blue, but he's an interesting out. If he proves, like Mikey says, that there's more gas tank, that the power's real, that kickboxing game's not going to slow down at 205. He's got the body for it.
Okay, I didn't hear a word you said after you just told me the Baron era is still alive when Baron has lost, 17 straight fights now?
I did back it up with a joke there, though, but come on.
First of all, we were seconds away from a t-shirt bet on Saturday night because I was, pretty in on Anthony Pettis winning just because I didn't want to see Stephen Thompson win. And if I could have convinced you to actually agree to take that bet, oh, I would have been so happy because I would have got a new shirt. I would have got that Jorge Masvidal shirt, the three-piece and a soda. I'm going to get that shirt from you. Don't worry.
I almost signed on the dotted line. I almost got myself a home sweet home shirt.
You would have lost.
Well, I'm saying, what's with the Stephen Thompson hate between you and our colleague Jack Crosby? I mean, how could you hate Stephen Thompson?
It's not that I hate him. I just think he's boring and he's just a nerd. Like, he's just another guy. Like, he's fun, but... Like I said, he hasn't finished anybody in a long time.
How dare you. All right, let's get into this weekend. Let's send him home strong here. Philadelphia UFC Fight Night on regular ESPN, guys. Not the Deuce, not the Plus, not the Ocho. We're getting the big times, and we have a violent main event coming our way. Lightweight. The king of all that is violent, Justin Gaethje, although I think he lost that lineal crown to Eddie Alvarez, in their holy hell war. But he's going to fight Edson Barbosa, and Edson Barbosa brings the highlight reel violence. Gaethje brings sort of the soul-crushing CTE violence. This is going to be violent, guys. High theater. Who wins this? Because I'm not sure Justin Gaethje is back just because he caught James Vick. I'm not sure he's necessarily anything but what we think he is. He's just a mauling SOB who will break your backbone if you don't kill him.
By the way, Eddie Alvarez also fights this weekend for one championship in Tokyo.
What's the viewing options on that? And what time of day?
A Russian illegal stream, I believe.
Is it, there's no Bleacher Report stream live or anything like that?
No, weren't you the one who told me that you can only, it's all tape delayed?
I thought the TNT monthly 1 hour shows are tape delayed, but I didn't know about any.
Maybe it is. I don't know. But anyway, I kind of agree with you on that, but this is, can I just say that since they started the new ESPN deal, the main events that we've gotten have been all fire. Like, they've all lived up to those expectations and billing. And if this, there's a 0.1% chance that this one doesn't, just because these two guys are just so damn good and they're such killers. Like, my thought is that Barbosa is going to want to keep this at distance so that he can use those crazy leg kicks that he throws. But Gaethje is best when he's in close and can just maul you, and then all of a sudden Rolling Thunder shows up with his foot behind your head. You know, like, I have no idea how this is going to play out. My pick is trying to just be conservative and take Edson Barboza, but I could easily see Justin Gaethje knocking Edson Barboza out cold. Like, I have no idea how this one plays out, but I just want to see it.
Look, I thought Gaethje responded well with, in some ways, his career on the line against James Vick, right? Like, if we're being honest, like, he would have devolved quickly into sort of just a Diego Sanchez level guy. I don't necessarily know though what he can fix, because he kind of was this guy in World Series of Fighting too. Doesn't wrestle enough, relies on his chin, and just turns it into a caveman war. Barboza's the kind that can light that up. Guys, I'm looking at Barboza's recent run. Like, yeah, let's look at his last 9 fights. He's 5-4. But tell me who's fought a better 9 consecutive fighters than this. You ready? Michael Johnson, Paul Felder, Tony Ferguson, Anthony Pettis, Gilbert Melendez, Benil Dariush, Habib, Kevin Lee, and Dan Hooker. And he's coming off a very impressive win against Dan Hooker in December. This guy only fights the best. He's resurrected himself, specifically coming off of the 2 losses to Kevin Lee and Habib, where we started to think, you know, is it piling up? Is it too much now? Well, no, he almost finished Kevin Lee, if you don't forget. I think he's in a sneaky spot where he could go on a run here. Where, like, he's starting to become sort of a guy where we're like, okay, he's been around a while now in the division. He's fought everybody. Probably not going to get any better or worse than he is now for a couple more years. I think he's kind of peaking right now. I think there's a wrong time for Gaethje to walk in there, because I think Barboza's figuring things out now. And I think Gaethje, yes, will be up in his grill, but you can light Gaethje up. And Barboza has finish you type strikes in that arsenal.
You think he can go on a run here? I don't know, man. I mean, yes, like you said, he's only fighting the elites, but he's losing to the elites. Like, he's losing to Kevin Lee. He's losing to Khabib. He's losing to Tony Ferguson. He lost to Michael Johnson. Like, I don't know.
The Khabib was the low point, dude. He got absolutely dominated in that fight, and he showed a ton of chin to hang around. That's the low point. I think he's bounced back fairly well from that, though. I mean, he almost knocked out Kevin Lee.
Yes. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. That was one of the greatest highlights I've ever seen, when Kevin Lee started doing the running man while he was knocked out cold standing up. It just depends on matchmaking with him, man. Like, that's the thing. This kind of matchmaking benefits him. But if they start putting him in there with wrestlers again, then he's going to get dominated, because he clearly has shown he has no idea what to do once he gets down to the ground. So
I know we're not,
if he's going
to
go on a run like that, he's going to have to do it against stand-up strikers.
I know we're not allowed to talk about Connor anymore on the show, but damn, Connor and Barboza would be the ultimate hot sex fire, right?
I mean, don't you think Barboza would light him up?
There'd be a good chance for that. But let's not forget, Connor's got to come back and prove again that he can be 2016 Connor. Connor's still in the Mayweather fight, as far as I'm concerned, right? Because he didn't show anything against Habib, right? If Connor can prove again that he's, you know, 85% of the guy he used to be, he's still the perfect counter striker for a guy like Barboza, who's probably going to come in too flashy and can be laid out with one perfect shot. Let's not forget what Connor's power does. Even at 55, he will lay you out with the perfect shot, Brandon, and end the fight. If he's still that guy, and that's why we all want to find out. Let's stop talking about it and let's see it. What's stopping Connor from fighting 5 times by the end of 2020? What's stopping that?
Politics and money. The Irish mob. I mean, that's really it. Like, that, we talked about it last week, but my football coach in high school used to say, don't talk about it, be about it. Like, be about this fight game, Connor, if you really want to keep doing this. Like, stop teasing everybody and do it.
All right. Keith Byers. Can we put that, can we frame that? Can we carve it into stone next to Tebow's speech, please?
Yeah. In Gainesville, too. Only in Gainesville.
Amazing. All right. So, look, it's going to be violent. It's going to be fun. I think Barboza stops him late, because there's something about the heart that Barboza showed against Habib in taking that beating really unnecessarily. Let's remember, we're like, why is this fight still going on? Why is Barboza keep walking into a beating right now? I think he showed you something in there that he can go to that extra side room in hell that Gaethje takes every opponent. Look, if you're going to sign up to fight Justin Gaethje, even if you're going to finish him, you're going to go to that dark room at the end of the hall down deep in hell. I think Barbosa comes out of that as the last man standing because Gaethje's only going to get worse from here, guys. Right? It's only gonna get harder for him to pull those type of Michael Johnson comeback fights. And I know Michael Johnson beat Barbosa, but Michael Johnson ain't Barbosa right now. Barbosa's gonna knock him out in the third round.
Ooh, third round. If this fight gets to a third round, I will be shocked. That's more of my take. It's like, I think this is just gonna be a firefight from the get-go. Hopefully Barbosa keeps his pace and he just picks away from the outside with his big, huge leg kicks and tries to throw one of those spinning hook kicks and knocks out Gaethje. But I just don't know, man. Like maybe Gaethje just comes out guns blazing. I'm going out on my shield kind of way, you know, and just throw something crazy that we haven't seen before and knocks out Barbosa. My pick with my heart wants Gaethje to win this fight just because I think he's more interesting, but Barbosa does. I think Barbosa finishes this off in the second round.
All right. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Barbosa also.
What's the line on this one?
I will get that right now.
But yeah, something just came up. BC Henry Cejudo's on Ariel's show. He said that the plan right now is for him to fight Marlon Moraes for the bantamweight title as the main event at 238 in Chicago on June 8th.
Wow.
That's interesting.
I will have respect for the UFC if they make a decision on flyweight before that and don't wait to see what happens, which of course they are going to do. Yeah.
All right. Edson Barbosa is the favorite ranging anywhere from -140 to -170 on the books.
That's about right.
Yeah. And Gaethje's a small underdog though.
+125 to around +140, I'm saying.
All right, let's run through what else we got here. Co-main event, middleweight bout, David Branch versus Jack Hermanson. It's not moving me on the surface. Anything deep inside that I should care about?
I mean, Hermanson's somebody that they want to make a little bit more of a star out of, but I don't think this is the opponent to do it. David Branch is still a good fighter.
He's still a tough out, but he's never – he's proven he can't get over that hill, though.
Yeah.
All right, we got Josh Emmett, who Brandon apparently hates, this featherweight against Michael Johnson. Look, this is a pretty even fight, betting odds-wise, and I think in the cage. Look, Michael Johnson's always going to be a tough out. There's no question about it. Emmett, of course, coming off of that disastrous knockout loss to Jeremy Stephens at a time where he was really starting to look like maybe we needed to take more notice, more care of him, but he's back at featherweight. This could be fun. This could be wild, but Josh Emmett has to win this fight.
He does. I mean, as he even said in the build-up to that Jeremy Stephens fight, he was the training partner for all those guys at Team Alpha Male. Like, he was the guy who would go in there and simulate who they were fighting in their upcoming bout. So, if Emmett is going to be a thing, he needs to get a win over Michael Johnson. Because Michael Johnson's not gatekeeper, but he's just like another run-of-the-mill featherweight at this point.
He has the worst recent record for a guy with that much skill. It's really amazing how many losses there are in the last 5 years for a guy. I mean, yeah, he's coming off two wins, but I mean, split decision with Touchy Feely, beat Artem. Nah. But, it's going to be a good fight to test. Look, Emmett's got to come back, man. That was a tough knockout loss. You were trying to get me in on the Emmett train before that. I remember.
Yeah. And then he disappointed me.
All right. Here's the fight.
I was cage side for that one.
Here's the fight I care about arguably the most. Look, guys, 115 women's strawweight, it always bangs. It's amazing. It's such a deep, amazing weight class. It started with that season of Tough in late 2014 that they used. And you go back and look at who was on that show. It really is all killer, no filler. And the division, really, none of these girls have entered the wash zone. Like, look, let's be honest. The Ronda era at bantamweight has aged really bad. Couple of those girls that Ronda beat are still lingering. No one's ever done anything outside of lose one-sided to Ronda. Strawweight, these girls keep coming back. There's no easy fights here. We're getting Carolina Kovalkiewicz against Michelle Waterson, 115. In a lot of ways, guys, you know, you win, you're not so far out from a title opportunity. You lose, you're really getting pushed back there. And for Kovalkiewicz, I mean, she's coming off arguably the most brutal knockout loss in women's UFC history. I mean, that's about as ridiculously powerful as it gets. Lights turned off by Jessica Andrade last September. She's back. She's 2-3 in her last five, including that title loss to Joanna. But she's still got the goods. I still think she's title contender material. And I've never really been all that high on Waterson during this run. How do you guys see this one playing out?
Yeah, I mean, Carolina's loss was just so bad. Like, I don't think I've ever seen somebody at that weight class lose that way. But in the same light, Waterson's kind of a blown up strawweight, which is even kind of weird to say just because she was an atomweight champion before she joined UFC at 105, which is just unreal. But she's had a tough go with the different skill levels at UFC at 115. And yeah, I'm a little worried about her in this fight. They did the nice ESPN feature on her and how being a mother in fighting is kind of, it's got a stigma almost because they think that women care more about their family than their fight future. And it's just not true. So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting storylines from that in this where they're trying to make her more of a star on ESPN. But at the same time, I think Carolina should finish her in this fight if they're able to keep it standing. Michelle's chances to win here is by taking this to the ground and out grappling Carolina, which is going to be tough for her. But I think Carolina will be able to stay away from the ground game and keep this at distance and win a nice decision.
Yeah, Carolina's really good at controlling distance with hard strikes and really giving you pause on coming forward. I mean, let's not forget what she did against Joanna late in that fight. It was Joanna who got sent to the hospital after that tough five-round loss in New York. But why this is such great matchmaking is because, like we established, Carolina coming off as disastrous a knockout loss as you could have. And then Waterson, who's been up and down since making her UFC debut in 2015, coming off a really good unanimous decision win over Felice Herrig at 229, in which that fight went back and forth and she really outworked her down the stretch. This is a big opportunity for Waterson. It would be three in a row and this would be the biggest name victory. I mean, she'd be PVZ, of course, but in terms of an actual critically tough name. And the same thing, like I mentioned to Carolina, you get this win, you're right back where you need to be. I think if she can control it from distance, exactly like you laid it out, this is a fight Carolina should win. But Mikey, you got to prove that you can come back. Have you seen a worse knockout in a women's fight than that? It's brutal.
That was, the knockout was brutal. But I love Kovalkiewicz, and I really hope that she comes out here like she did in those Joanna fights. And she stays at distance exactly like you guys said and kind of tries to pick her apart. Because I agree with you, Brian. I don't believe my hype for the Karate Hottie isn't there. I think she's a little too small. And I just don't see her beating the top people in the division. I would love to see Carolina get a win. Maybe face someone at the top. And then maybe even get that title shot because she beat Rose. But that's a while down the road. So I think Carolina wins, grinds out a decision, I would probably say.
Brandon, true or false, you've seen the Michelle Waterson Holly Holm level up video?
I don't think so.
All right. All right, we'll
got
leave
some
that
homework
there
for tonight.
Only the lonely. Hey, what else we got on this card? Anything else? Brandon, you look so mad. What's going on? What, the Connor talk just ruined your day. I've never seen someone so asleep at the mic. You all right over there?
I'm doing great. I'm just ready to talk about Sodiq Youssef because he is the damn truth, and you are going to be woke to him after this weekend.
Yeah, what else should I care about on this card? Tell me.
Well, you got that kid, and then you've also got your boy Ross Pearson fighting again this weekend.
Well, someone's going to end up with a knockout loss. I mean, Desmond Green, this is not a bad matchup.
Is Mark De La Rosa Montana De La Rosa's brother?
Could be husband. She's married
maybe
to a fighter.
Husband.
You got Ray Borg on the card at the bottom versus Kyler Phillips.
I mean, I'm interested in anything Ray Borg after everything that he's been through the last few months and years. So I'm really rooting for him to get a win because I'm sure he needs that money to help with his kid.
No doubt about it. That's an interesting story there. I'm really pulling for him on that regard. Hey, by the way, Pearson coming off, 5 defeats in 6 fights. Yeesh.
That's your boy, baby.
Yeesh, he does bring the pain, man. I mean, I thought he was going to beat Will Brooks in that, UFC debut. Remember that back in the day, Vegas?
Yeah, God.
Yes, I do remember that.
All right, guys, that'll wrap it up. UFC Philly this weekend on ESPN. We'll be interested to see out of that who calls out Conor McGregor and what lies Dana White tells. Now, we'll see where they go. We know the future of the bantamweight division. We don't know flyweight. We barely know heavyweight. Who knows at lightweight, guys? It's all up to, in the moment, the decisions they make. But you know you're going to get that performance-enhancing audio when you dial into this show. Thank you for joining us another week. Hey, follow my friends on social media, at BrandonY65, right, on Twitter, at what, Mikey, again?
MJMCBSI.
I may write that down one time. All right. Follow us the show at State of Combat there. Check out our other fine SOC offerings this week. A lot of wrestling coming on the timeline the next 2 weeks, guys. If you subscribe to this show, it's WrestleMania season. A lot of big time guests coming. Wise, not moved by that. Not moved by that. Wise, you're an MMA guy. You're going to watch WrestleMania 35? Check out what's going on with Lesnar, Lashley, Rousey.
That's the only thing we forgot to mention this week was that DC said he might have to go to WrestleMania to challenge Brock Lesnar to get his fight.
I have a quick question for some WWE fans.
Yeah, what do you got?
Is Gronk coming? You guys got Gronk coming over to the WWE?
Gronk retires from the Patriots.
On BetDSI, he is -165 to be at Monday Night Raw tonight.
Now that would be wild. It's
kind of crazy.
I wonder if they have him so – Gronk had a WrestleMania moment 2 years ago. A lot of people remember it was in Orlando, correct? Yeah. It was a battle royal. He jumped in to help his buddy Mojo Rawley against Jinder Mahal. They paid it off at another Monday Night Raw where Gronk came in the ring. Imagine if he comes back at this Mania and wins the damn battle royal there, the Andre the Giant trophy. Look, they've been talking about it for years. I've interviewed Mojo Rawley a million times. We always ask him about it. He says, look, when Robbie G's ready, you guys are going to see. I wonder if he's ready. Brandon, would that get you back in a little? Just a little?
Robbie G.
Yeah.
Lord. No.
All right. What do you think it looks like when Mojo Rawley and Robbie G go out and hit the clubs?
God.
Pray for everyone in the surrounding area.
Yeah. Could we see a day where Daniel Cormier wrestles Rob Gronkowski in WWE?
Oh God, that's brilliant crossover stuff right there. That is pretty damn brilliant. I could get into that. I could get it. Look, here's the thing. I can get into celebrity. It's always been that way. Like when Lawrence Taylor fought Bam Bam Bigelow at WrestleMania 11, like it's a train wreck, but you want to see. Like, it's different when somebody like Rousey's going full-time. That's another conversation, because you're now comparing her against other full-timers and saying, you know, is she as good? Is she a phenom? Is she this? I kind of like the one-off celebrity run-in for a match, and it's fun.
Mayweather Big Show?
What'd you say?
Mayweather Big Show.
Dude, go back and watch that, Mayweather Big Show, 11 years later. That's some good-ass business inside the ring. The story they told, the action. Mayweather took a couple bumps. You're not into that, Brandon?
I mean, the dude is 7 feet tall, 450 pounds, wrestling a 5'8", 147 pound guy. Come on.
Only one of those guys left the ring with a bloody nose that night.
Well, that was in the lead up. But yeah, that sold the damn fight. And Mayweather, you know, unbeaten in boxing, unbeaten in pro wrestling too. You gotta give him that, alright? Took a few L's in the public eyes with the law, but that's another story altogether. All right, we're out of the show. That's it. Face the Pain. It's over. Thank you for listening this week. Brandon, any other message for people?
We out.